All of these icons are at risk from climate change.
People around the world are really feeling what climate change means for them.
The opportunities are here now and we can solve this problem.
You're listening to the Climate Council podcast.
Welcome to the Climate Council podcast. I'm Alexia Boland. The Climate Council and its reports are powered by the collective experience of some of the world's most talented climate scientists, energy sector veterans, and environmental experts. Today's episode is the very first in our Meet the Council series, and we speak to climate counsellor and policy and economics specialist, Professor Karen Hussey. Professor Karen Hussey is a leading Australian researcher in the field of public policy and governance, particularly in the areas of sustainable development, environmental policy, and international trade. Today we look at how climate change and climate solutions became a common thread throughout Professor Hussey's academic career and how she soon put her expert political and economic skills into practice. Professor Hussey is the director for the Centre for Policy Futures at the University of Queensland, and this is her story.
I chose to study politics and economics as an undergraduate because I was really... Well, to be honest, I was really interested in knowing how to change the world, and I had come out of a pretty amazing 2 years at a United World College in Hong Kong, and it struck me that understanding economics and the way decisions seem to be made, particularly in the context of politics, was going to be pretty important if I wanted to make some kind of a contribution. Although at the time, I can tell you, I had no idea what I was going to do. So I did politics and economics. And then in my final year, I discovered two things. One was the European Union, and I took a really fantastic course looking at the history and evolution of the European Economic Community, and of course that turned into the EU. And alongside that, I took environmental economics and environmental politics, and I realized fairly quickly that the European Union, for reasons that at the time I didn't quite understand, was becoming a really progressive environmental leader, particularly on climate change. And so that piqued my interest in understanding, you know, why it was that the EU seemed to be coming out as a really important actor in global environmental governance. So I chose to do a Master's of Economics, but looking particularly at the EU and the single European market. And within that, I was allowed to do a Master's thesis on anything I wanted. So I looked at the role of the EU in climate change negotiations, and particularly in the lead up to the Kyoto Protocol. But again, I had really very sort of open ideas as to what I would do with my life. So I finished the master's, and then my husband and I decided to move back to Australia, and we were having a baby, and someone said to me, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to have a baby. What do you mean you're going to have a baby? What else are you going to do? And I said, what do you mean what else am I going to do? Isn't that enough? And I said, no, you need to, you'll be bored out of your mind. You need to do something else. Why don't you do a PhD? So when my oldest child was 6 weeks old, I started a PhD at the University of Melbourne. And by stage, I was really interested in global environmental governance, particularly around climate change and addressing, you know, what was just then emerging as being the biggest environmental issue and threat that we needed to address, juxtaposed with my keen interest in the peculiarities of the EU as an institution. So I did my PhD looking at the EU as a global environmental leader, and that led to all sorts of things. I was very lucky. I got a postdoctoral fellowship at ANU, which kind of, at that point, I really hadn't anticipated being an academic, but I got a postdoc. I was very lucky, and everyone said I was very lucky. So I moved from Melbourne to ANU. I did the postdoc on agri-environment schemes in Europe and Australia, and that basically took me very quickly into water resource management. And, of course, from water resource management, you end up, certainly in the Australian context, looking at water variability and drought. And, you know, I was right back to, oh, heck, climate change is an issue. It's got profound implications for Australia's agricultural sector. so ever since, I've really had this theme throughout my academic career, looking at climate change and its the implications of it for different sectors and different jurisdictions, but perhaps most importantly, what we can do about it from a policy and a legal perspective and an economic perspective.
You've really had climate change as a common thread, like you were saying, all the way through your career, even from very early beginnings. You've been described as designing and delivering cutting-edge social science research, focusing on climate change mitigation and adaptation. What are your thoughts on this? What can you tell me about that kind of statement?
Well, it's flattering. I think I was very lucky in so much as I came to academia when there was an acknowledgement that we needed to focus on solutions. So having spent many, many years with various parts of the academy describing the problem in ever finer detail, I hit academia in the mid-2000s when all actors, whether it was academics or NGOs or governments, even industry, was saying, okay, we get it, but what do we do about it? And it was for me an eye-opener, because you don't actually know what to do about it unless you really, really understand the problem and the causes underlying it. And very quickly, that leads to interdisciplinary research. So I suppose, to come back to what the statement was, cutting-edge social science research, I think the cutting-edge bit is simply that my colleagues and I were committed to bringing together different disciplinary perspectives, and indeed bringing together perspectives from government and non-government organizations, so that we could think about solutions with a real-world hat on, rather than as some sort of isolated academic exercise that may or may not gain traction. And I honestly think that's profoundly important for the way research and the academy moves forward in the future, is to have that co-design, that co-production, that co-development, because the question that I might ask might be irrelevant once you consider the viewpoints of different government actors or different political priorities or the constraints that exist for a particular industry or sector. And so, where we're moving, and certainly how I've tried to shape my research, has been to work constantly with others, and that there's a saying that collaboration is a contact sport, and I've really taken that to heart.
And as a policy expert, what are your thoughts on Australia's current climate and energy policy approach towards tackling climate change?
Oh, it's been fascinating, it's been exhilarating, and it's been depressing over the last decade, all of the above. There was a time when we had the most progressive, comprehensive, and meaningful climate change policy in the world, and that was a great time to be Australian. And then we've waxed and waned since then. My own view is that Australia has a keen responsibility to really lead the world in climate change policy responses and solutions, because we're a rich, developed, clever, innovative nation. And we should really punch above our weight in offering solutions. So at the moment, I'm pretty disappointed. I don't think 26% to 28% reduction in greenhouse gas emissions is ambitious enough, and I'm certainly not seeing enough federal leadership on climate change to make me feel more comfortable about our capacity to not only deliver our international obligations and our moral obligations, but indeed to actually be able to limit global average warming to 2 degrees, or better yet, 1.5. That said, there's a lot to be proud of at the state level, and this is where a federal system is particularly interesting. So the fact that you can have different states push forward and deliver strong ambitions, have proof of concepts in terms of the penetration of increasing levels of renewable energy, the introduction of new, more stringent regulations and standards. That's exciting, and that's where a federal system can really offer opportunities So watching South Australia, watching Victoria, watching even Queensland now with its very progressive government, it does make you more excited, or at least a little bit more confident that Australia is going to be able to come to the party when the politics is right.
And obviously with your background and research focusing so much on solutions, how does it feel being part of the Climate Council in an organisation that's working towards the greater solution?
Oh, it's a privilege. It's humbling. It's been an incredible experience on a range of different fronts. In fact, the councillor who originally approached me about being with the Climate Council said, Karen, it's not like anything else you've done as an academic. It really makes you be a part of a solution-oriented organisation that's on the ground making a difference. You know, I had a bit of a giggle and I thought, yeah, I'm sure you're overstating it. but she wasn't. She wasn't. And it's been an eye-opener ever since. The Climate Council is an organisation that is unique in so much as it relies entirely on evidence-based peer-reviewed science and social science to make its point. So it's robust, it's empirically driven, and it's respected for that. So it has a high level of integrity, which is its mainstay, which means, of course, that it has authority. The reliance on... not so much the reliance, but the willingness of the Climate Council to engage with policymakers on both sides of the aisle, to engage with academics across different sectors and different institutions, willingness to work collaboratively with councils, to work collaboratively with other NGOs. It really speaks to that statement I was making earlier around how we all need to move forward, that it really is about collaboration. It's about meaningful, tangible, identifiable solutions that are generated collectively. And I've seen that up close and personal through the Climate Council, or particularly through the City's Power Partnership, which it sounds so simple. You know, gee, local councils are at the coalface, excuse the pun. can we help them? What can we do to help them? You know, there's a morass of information out there. How do they wade through it? How can they learn mistakes, good and bad, from others? Oh, well, I know. Why don't we design something called the City's Power Partnership to actually help them do that and help them have access to expertise that they can trust, resources that they can have faith in? And it happened. I mean, that was 18 months ago?
Yeah, a year ago.
And now there's
nearly
100 councils that are members. I mean, this, good grief, if you asked almost any other organisation to do that in a 12-month period, I can't imagine it happening.
And you were there from the very beginning and really spearheaded that role in terms of encouraging local governments and their communities to, you know, roll up their sleeves and help tackle climate change. You know, is it just that going back to that solutions basis again, but really tangible solutions that are possible for, you know, individuals as well?
Yeah. I mean, in academia, we can tend to be, you know, quite abstract, quite high level, and a little bit too far away from the action. But the City's Power Partnership is really that acknowledgement that the hard decisions are being made at very local levels. And in fact, the enthusiasm and the momentum is occurring at very local levels. And so being able to harness that ambition and that momentum and tie it to evidence-based decision making is the only way to go. It's really a tangible way to make a difference every day with every decision, whether it's a policy decision or an investment decision or an engagement decision, to be able to say, look, you've got two or three choices. If you're concerned about sustainability, if you're concerned about equity, intergenerational and intragenerational equity, if you're concerned about climate change, if you're concerned about all of these social norms that I think almost everybody is, then this is the decision you should make. And here's the evidence to back it up. And here are the people to talk to, and we'll help you do it. That's really unique and really powerful. And And I think that's where the humbling side of being a part of the Climate Council really is. And of course, you know, everyone in the Climate Council is just so committed and so, gosh, so, I don't think I have words. It's, it's a culture, right? It's a whole culture that permeates through the organisation. It's a culture of optimism, but also can-do attitude. And that's really, it's really refreshing.
And finally, Professor Hussey, what's your advice to others in the policy and economic sector who might be looking to follow a similar path along behind you? What would be the best advice you'd give them?
Well, if they're academics, then I would suggest, and it's not the first time I've said this, I would suggest, in addition to the academic research and the publications that you've got to do, to get out there and take part in that contact sport, to be solutions-oriented, wake up every morning and say, what's the problem I'm addressing today? And be very real about whether your work is addressing that problem, and who's the audience for your research. So, in my space, that's frankly quite a bit easier because I am in policy and economics, and so, you know, I know which level of government I'm targeting, or at least I'm vaguely relevant to. But I do think it's a question that every academic should be asking themselves, or everybody, is what am I doing? Where am I making a difference? How can I make more of a difference? And who is it that I'm really targeting here? And who should I be working with? So it's really being a lot more self-reflective about our tiny little piece of the world and how we can use, you know, whatever resources, energy, authority, knowledge we might have to make a difference. And do it knowingly, actively, and with confidence.
You're up to date from the Climate Council podcast team. You can access all of the latest Climate Council reports, fact sheets and podcasts at climatecouncil.org.au. You can also follow us at Climate Council on Twitter and /Climate Council on Facebook. Don't forget the Climate Council is independent and community funded. We rely on donations to fund our critical research, campaigns and projects. So please help to support our work and donate via our website today.